You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
One of the grand features of civilization is that any time of the day, or especially night, we can all go downtown.
The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown.
Petula Clark there in that fairly trivial but classic pop tune from the 1960s is singing about an option that didn't exist for most of recorded history. Lighting that changed the urban nightscape from a terrifying domain of demons and chaos into a place of relaxed play and extended work. It transformed the ways we see night and day, broadened culture away from the church, transformed gender relationships, gave humanity the first powerful taste of control over nature, and transformed the notion of God and the supernatural forever. That's right. The simple matter of lighting at night, lighting in the streets. You might have missed this historical, interesting new book from the Cambridge University Press. Historian Craig Kozlowski has recently documented the power of this experience of Europe emerging into an era of street lighting and light for commercial and domestic spaces at all hours of the night. Evening's Empire, it's called, A History of the Night in Early Modern Europe. Craig Kozlowski, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Good morning to you.
So the first question is, what was the night before light came to the cities of Europe? What was it like? How was it characterized? And what changed when the night was, as you say, colonized with the use of street lighting?
Well, before the night was colonized by street lighting, there were indigenous people in the night, students, young people, apprentices, prostitutes, customers of prostitutes, drunken brawlers. So the night in medieval London or Paris had a lot of activity, but was dangerous, illicit, as you said, chaotic, and unregulated. And that was scary for respectable men and women who might want to use the night to get to a cafe or a coffee house or get out for socializing.
Who saw the power of organized street lighting, of essentially creating day at night, as a political tool, as a sort of a cultural phenomenon?
What's so fascinating is that in Europe in 1660, no city has permanent public street lighting. But by 1700, it's been erected in Paris on the command of Louis XIV, the Sun King. It's been erected in Amsterdam by the city council, in London by a stock corporation. So across Europe, across Northern Europe, different kinds of rulers all recognize simultaneously the power that they can get by lighting up the night.
Describe the resistance to street lighting in the city of Leipzig in Germany.
Well, in Leipzig, before the street lighting went up, the city officials knew exactly who would be a problem. Leipzig's student population. It was a city filled with students. These students were young and aristocratic, so they had the most violent, uninhibited attitude toward the night. And the creation of street lighting created a new crime, the crime of lantern smashing. These lanterns were expensive. They were oil lamps and glass-paned lanterns. And even before the street lighting went up in Leipzig, they issued an edict and said, any student smashing lanterns, it's bread and water for 30 days in the university's own prison for students caught doing this.
We're talking with University of Illinois professor Craig Kozlowski, who's the author of Evening's Empire, A History of the Night in Early Modern Europe. What was the technology? We talk about technological revolutions a lot on this program, but this is an interesting one. What was the technology that enabled this street lighting throughout Europe and enabled this transformation to take place?
Well, what's so fascinating as I was researching this book is I discovered there's nothing new about the technology at all in 1660 or in 1700. These are oil lamps in glass lanterns. The technology has been around for centuries. And we're often used to thinking in this technological age that technology drives social change. But really, I'm a cultural historian, so I ask the big question, why did people want to light up the night in 1660 in London, Paris, Amsterdam, Leipzig, as they never had before? That's really the question that drives my work.
You know, this experience, even though you're talking about something from the 17th century, in many ways, this experience of the change from not having light to having light is not so remote. It's accessible to us today. Listen to the voice of this fellow, Abdoulaye, who's from Vogo, which is a village in northern Tamale, which is a district in the northern region of Ghana, who received electricity and therefore lighting very, very recently. Listen.
electricity on the 30th of July, 2009. Everybody in the village were so happy. I remember when we did not have light. We didn't know what is happening in the world. But as soon as we get the electricity, each and every individual has got TV set, television by in your room, and then you can see what is happening in the whole world. I've seen a lot of news, like what has happened, just happened in Libya. I saw everything on my television in my room. It's very terrible to live in the dark. Very terrible.
And that was true back in the 1600s and 1700s. Very terrible to live in the dark. What's changed about our view of the dark, our view of God, and those gender relationships you talk about?
Well, one of the complaints about the analog today to what Abdullah is talking about there was the coffee house. This was a place where people could go out, and they were most popular at night, and they could get news and information about the world. They could mingle with people from different religions, different social classes. So the coffee house and the tavern were spaces where people could go after work to get news and information. And it's a little bit like what your correspondent from Ghana is talking about there. When people got together in coffee houses at night, all the authorities complain that they are subverting political authority by questioning things like monarchy, and they're questioning things that go bump in the night. They sit down in coffee houses, and somebody immediately starts to say, is there really any such thing as ghosts? And the minute you do that, some pious person says, if you don't believe in ghosts, you probably don't believe in God either. And it just goes downhill from there.
All enabled by lighting. Finally, how do women's roles change when they're enabled to go out at night as well?
You know, women were not welcome in coffee houses in England, in Germany, in the Netherlands. In France, aristocratic women really made the coffee house what it was. So the night was a new space for women in these cities. It was made safer by street lighting, but the coffee house was still pretty much an all-male, very smoky domain, except in France. They had their own approach.
Of course, in France. And, of course, it set in motion so many changes in modern life. Evening's Empire is the name of the book, A History of the Night in Early Modern Europe, How Light Came to Europe. Historian Craig Kozlowski, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, John.